Committee on Education will come to order. As usual, if you have a cell phone, please turn it off. We are going not in order today.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
for the record, I just wanted to indicate that in Lincoln City right now it's blue skies and 60 degrees.
Oh. For the record, I object.
For the record, my dog can't walk over the snow.
Excuse me for interrupting.
Anybody else want to make a weather report?
You should tie that in with your attempt to get a license plate for the coast.
It's all blue. But we digress.
We do digress. Thank you all very much for making it in today. I hope you were all able to get home safely on Thursday and had no trouble getting back today. We're going to go out of order. The speaker is coming at 2:30 about House Bill 4127, so we'll probably get to that one last. And Representative Fagan, do you have to leave for any other committees, or can you kind of go
not.
With the flow? Great. And Representative Johnson will come when we call? Okay, great. So we're going to start with a work session, opening a work session on House Bill 4150. And I'm going to give the script to Representative Reardon. Representative Reardon. Oh, do you want to tell us what the bill is?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4150 is in my stack of papers here somewhere. House Bill 4150 is the bill that we heard last Wednesday. It's Representative Buckley's bill. It revises the assessment and grading system standards for school districts and establishes standards for proficiency education. There are two amendments before the committee, the dash threes and dash fours. And the dash threes allow students to use certain accommodations to fulfill graduation requirements. And the dash fours require the Department of Education to coordinate with the United States Department of Education to determine appropriate use of statewide summative assessments and to report back to the legislature no later than December 1st of 2014.
And we have all the paperwork we need to move these through?
Great. Yes, we do.
Thank you. Representative Reardon.
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 4150, dated February 4th, 2014.
Representative Reardon moves to adopt the dash three amendments to House Bill 4150, dated February 4th, 2014. And the dash threes are the allowing students to use their accommodations on work samples. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any discussion? Representative Wiesmith.
Madam Chair, who brings forth the dash three?
I have brought forward the dash three.
I understand that the superintendents had an amendment to the bill.
They do not have an amendment to the dash three.
No, to the bill too. You said we had two amendments.
I think we have the fiscals on the dash two and the dash three amendment today. Dash three and dash four amendment today.
I was informed that the superintendents had submitted an amendment to the bill.
And nobody has informed me that they intended to move another amendment to the bill today.
What other day would there be then?
What other day would there be?
Yes.
This bill was scheduled for a work session today.
This could be problematic, Madam Chair.
And we might discuss other amendments after we get through the... Right now we're on the dash three. So why don't we finish the dash three motion? Why don't we do these two amendment motions and then on the bill motion, or we can take a break in between the three and the four? Does that work? Okay, great. Is there any further discussion on the dash three amendment? No, I would just add that I'm really grateful to Dr. Golden and Deputy Superintendent Saxton for working with us on these amendments, and hopefully it will help kids be able to find success and get their high school diplomas. I think what we've learned is that there's a new federal law that denies students access to federal financial aid, any federal financial aid for any post-secondary program, if they don't have a regular diploma. And without being able to use the same accommodations that they use to get through high school, it's very difficult for them to demonstrate the essential skill. So is there any objection to the dash three amendment? Seeing none, that amendment is adopted. Representative Reardon.
Yes, Chair Gelser. I move to adopt the dash four amendments to House Bill 4150, dated February 5th, 2014.
Representative Reardon moves the dash four amendments, dated February 5th, 2014, to House Bill 4150. Is there any discussion? Representative Parrish.
And this amendment came from, actually supporting Senator Olson's goal that we can see where amendments come from. It would be helpful, but that's not one of our rules. This, the dash four came from where?
The dash four came from a variety of people. It went under my name. So the amendment came back to me later. This one directs the department to look at the implementation of Smarter Balanced and to negotiate about the use. And again, a lot of gratitude to Dr. Golden and Deputy Superintendent Saxton for helping to be sure the language was crafted in a way that does not threaten our waiver in any way. Representative Huffman.
Yeah, Madam Chair, so trying to read down through this quickly. So is this put in as a need because of the relating clause and not so much about 4150?
Yes.
I was trying to draw the connection there, and I was like, okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Wisnett.
Madam Chair, we just got these, right? Did they go out last week?
We had these last Wednesday, and we had a hearing on both of these last Wednesday.
On the dash three and the dash four?
Yes.
Yeah, they were. So does the teachers union support both of these, and does the superintendent support both of these?
I can't speak for other people, but.
So, you know, Madam Chair, I was not involved when we passed 2020, and I heard from the committee that the last hearing we had that, you know, it didn't satisfy everyone, or there's problems, and superintendents are dealing with it differently. And now we're having two other bills that I don't have an input from the teachers union or the superintendents on. Is that correct? To make a vote.
Well, we had.
I feel qualified to do that.
Okay. Well, we had a public hearing on the bill and on both amendments last Wednesday. The information about the amendments and about the bill was circulated quite broadly, including discussions at Salishan one weekend ago.
Were you there?
Right. But I was there and had conversations with many superintendents and administrators. I believe a lot of people have had conversations about these. Representative Buckley could speak more to these because they're his bill. And if you'd like, we could stand at ease for a couple of minutes and invite him over.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did hear Representative Buckley's testimony before. I understood that. But then the testimony we had later from the superintendents around the state gave me different feelings. I was hoping to support this with the teachers union's recommendation. We had problems, and I thought the testimony we had supported that. And now we have a dash five that this committee's not heard that comes from the superintendents that they all agreed to, and we're not going to have. I was just delivered. You don't have a copy of it.
It's very hard when a bill is scheduled for a work session if the chair has not been made aware of an amendment existing. So I have not seen the dash five amendment. Nobody has talked to me about a dash five amendment. My meetings today have included OEA, Chuck, and others. I have not seen a dash five amendment from anyone. This is the first I've ever heard of a dash five amendment.
Can we have Mr. Bennett come up then? Because I understood the dash five is in the superintendents. Mm-hmm. That's my understanding.
Do you want to come up? I mean, is this your amendment? Come on.
No. Madam Chair, maybe we should deal with the dash four first.
Yes, let's finish with the dash four first. So again, it's the dash four that's on the table. Thank you, Representative Huffman. Is there any further discussion on the dash four, Representative Huffman?
Yes, thank you. Since it is on a different topic, albeit education, I've got some questions in the future, so I'm just kind of throwing this out to Dr. Golden, but, you know, if in the interim maybe we could have a hearing on Common Core and the assessment to address some of the concerns that constituents have in light of the fact that there has been, you know, a complete different set of people that are in charge of education, OEIB, et cetera, and so on, since Susan Castillo and the board adopted Common Core and all that stuff. So Just wanted to get that on the record and ask that maybe we could do that at some point.
Absolutely. And I think that really is part of the idea behind this amendment. It asks for that discussion, that report back, and talking about some of the concerns that people have raised, the resources, the time, the access to technology, where the alignment is with professional development around the Common Core, and then testing the kids on those standards. So I think all of this kind of prompts that ongoing discussion. Question of course.
So this dash four then will hopefully aid districts in figuring out the sorts of criteria that we should have for testing out these different Common Core standards? Is that?
No, the Dash 4 simply directs the department to make a report back about the resources that are needed. It will continue that conversation, and it asks the department to continue its negotiations with the U.S. Department of Ed about how to implement the Smarter Balanced as we're moving forward. That's a big change for the state.
Thanks.
Is there any further discussion on the Dash 4s? No, is there any objection to the Dash 4s? So why don't we go ahead and call the roll. Debbie? Thank you.
Representative Bagan.
Aye.
Representative Blumberg.
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Wisnant.
No.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer.
Excused.
Chair Gilson.
Aye. Having received the required votes, the amendment is adopted. Richard, do you have a copy of this Dash 5 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not. No.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Huffman.
An email just came in from Rep. Johnson's office to you and Richard with the Dash 5. I don't know if Chuck's seen him either. We could ask and maybe get him a copy so he...
Well, I think, unfortunately, we are really far behind on the process. We have the whole day backed up tomorrow. We haven't yet been granted another hearing. I have not been made aware until this very instant that there was another amendment, and it may be something to pursue on the other side, but I think here the clock is not on our side, and it's very hard to plan without that type of communication that there's something coming. And after the 20 minutes after the committee starts is kind of late when the work session's been scheduled for a week.
And I apologize. I thought you had received them.
So. I had not. Neither of us had received it. Representative Parrish.
Well, Chair, to your point, the clock is kind of not on our side, and my preference is not to work a bill that clearly has issues. We heard that from the superintendents who testified. I think we need to give consideration to the Dash 5. I would be willing to stand at recess, certainly. I don't know if there's a fiscal on the Dash 5s. I doubt it because it's a policy. This is pretty straightforward policy, but I think given that we heard testimony last week, and there are superintendents who came and spoke, whether COSA is going to take a formal position or not, sometimes that tends to not be the case, that COSA actually comes and does what other superintendents are asking for, but we heard from superintendents. I think we need to consider their amendment. I'm interested in stopping the committee and having the opportunity to read them and come back and potentially hear them.
So, the benefit of a bicameral legislature is we have a process that works on both sides. But in a 35-day session, it's incumbent that we all communicate very clearly about what's going on. These amendments, the Dash 3s and the Dash 4s, were presented to the committee last Wednesday. The work session for today has been scheduled, I believe, since the first day of session when we posted everything out. So the timeline was there. It's very, very difficult to accommodate 20 minutes after a hearing starts a completely unknown amendment. The additional issue is to have legislative fiscal be able to process the fiscal so that we have the paperwork to move forward. We aren't going to be able to do that today, and we have a large number of bills that we need to get through. That said, I would like to stand the committee at ease for 10 minutes until 1:35. So we're going to stand at ease, and then everybody please be back at 1:35. We're ready.
Okay,
we are back. Thank you all very much. We are still in work session on House Bill 4150. When last we met, we had adopted the dash threes and the dash fours. We learned about the existence of some dash fives. I have visited with the Speaker's office, who is going to give us some additional time, so we will be having House Ed either Tuesday night or Wednesday night, so please clear your calendars to be there, and we may not make it through all of the bills that we have today. But Representative Johnson, could you please come and present your amendment? Thank you very much for your patience with the confusion. I did not know this existed or was coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And yes, it has been a bit of a confusing day. Instead of taking the regular route through the gorge, I ended up coming back over the mountain to try to get here and save life and limb today. But we're here.
I'm glad you're safe. I'm glad you made it home safely the other night as well.
Yes.
I heard that was slippery.
My poor little pickup has a Band-Aid on it, but oh well. With that, thank you. I appreciate the time. The Dash 5s came to me.
And you have to introduce yourself for the record,
sorry.
Even though we called you Representative Johnson several times.
I am Mark Johnson, State Rep for House District 52. The Dash 5s would be a continuation in the conversation that you heard, I believe, when did you last meet? Wednesday of last week? From the superintendents that were here. Since that time, others have joined in. Don Grotting, I know from David Douglas. I believe there's quite a list of others, and I know there's a few superintendents from Central Oregon who have been talking about this bill and about the concept as well. So what you see in the Dash 5s are concepts that they conveyed to me. We forwarded those on only this morning to Legislative Council, so this has been a very quick turnaround, so that's what you see. So I believe if you go through page by page, I mean, there's just a few things in here. I think primarily, I think you look at the in the ballot or the bill, the relating clause. I think it talks about removing that creating new provisions. It would take that out of the relating clause. I think you get back into deleting some shalls and some ands and so forth. But I think one of the main substantive issues were in the numbers of great proficiencies content areas that could be included in these new grades, and I think the bill spells out three areas. They would just say no fewer than three, giving districts at the local level the ability to go beyond that should they choose to, feeling that legislators might not be the best determiners of what would be best to communicate at the local level, i.e. let's let the educators at the local level determine how many. So it would be a permissive change, not a mandated change. And I think beyond that, I believe the other addition would be, again, deleting that portion of the bill that called for the creation of the advisory committee at the local level. So I think those are the main items in here in trying to amend some maze and insert some shalls and that sort of a thing too. So I think if you go by and just look at the additions in here, it's pretty clear. So,
and have you discussed this with Representative Buckley, the chief sponsor of the bill?
I haven't had it. Like I said, I just received them myself at 12:30 today, or we just got them back from Legislative Council. Amazingly quick turnaround. So I'd be happy to discuss those with him.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Any questions for Representative Johnson? Representative Fagan.
Is this, you sound like you're bringing it on behalf of superintendents, but is this a COSA-sponsored amendment? Or
I don't believe COSA has...
Chuck, do you want to come on up, too, please?
Formally endorsed them. I'm just on the behalf of superintendents who are members of COSA, but I don't believe the organization itself has maybe seen them, probably, because Chuck got them probably 2 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And I got them probably 45 minutes, or an hour ago, so...
Madam Chair, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Representative Johnson describes accurately my exposure to these amendments, which is, thank you, Representative Huffman, for giving me a copy. I don't know, because all that's here are some line numbers and shells, and I need to at some point have a chance to sit down with the bill and take a look at this. We have had a chance to look at parts of this bill as a group. This issue, the general issue, I think, involved here, was presented a couple of times to a recent meeting we had. It's been referenced as the Salishan meeting, to a couple of different groups. And the issues that arose from 4150 primarily focused on an LC that you had developed, Madam Chair, and I know, as you're aware, substantial discussion focused primarily on modified diploma and essential skills portion of the bill, and we certainly want to thank you for the modifications you've made in that portion of the bill in cooperation with Dr. Golden and Superintendent Saxton. And those are the issues that primarily surfaced at our organization. I have since then, though, I think as people became more and more familiar with the bill, heard from several superintendents, a number of whom were here to testify, I think three or four were here to testify last week on this bill, with their individual concerns. So far, we've not processed this as an organization to determine of our in excess of 200 superintendents whether the concerns of this group has broad support.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Chuck? Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Bennett, or Representative Johnson, the issue seems to be the advisory committee. So my colleague to the left of me said that she reads it as they may or may not, or they can use an existing one, committee or form a new committee. Why would superintendents be opposed to that?
Representative, I think it's not the whether it's a new committee or an existing committee, but the fact that you would empower a committee to be put in an advisory role, recommending grading practices to school boards and superintendents. That's a different role. I mean, that is typically something that they would determine in of themselves rather than seek guidance or additional input from other factors outside of that. I think you heard that, I think, at the testimony last Wednesday from the superintendents, that they felt that was a superintendent and a board function to determine how the communication with parents about how the student proficiencies and standards are being met. So I guess that would be my
thank
my
you.
Response.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm the one that has, like, used to be three. I only have two of the superintendents that have written you. I lost sisters to Representative Huffman, but that's why I think they need more time and let the teachers and the superintendents work this out. I don't see anything, you know, an advisory committee is the word is advisory. It's not saying what you will do or not do. So I think this is really rushed. I mean, I'd like to have both parties on board on this thing, because I've got superintendents telling me no, and I've got teachers telling me yes, vote for this, and don't have any of Johnson's amendments. But I think there's some just difference of opinion here. To me, an advisory is an advisory, and I disagree. You know, I could sit down with my superintendent and say, what do you mean? Is there another word you can put in there? Or, you know, I think that the committee had testimony that showed that there's concern with 2020. We need to clarify. Even the chair made some comments that she thought that that's not what she meant when she was supporting 2020. And I think that this needs more time. I'm sorry that there's been meetings and everyone thought they were on board, but we're here, you know, amendments, and it's not on board. I think it would be better to get this right. Again, Representative Johnson and my superintendents, I don't understand advisory does not mean you're going to tell what's going on. So, I mean, that's where I am. I'm sorry. I'm just a common sense guy from North Carolina. But
no, and I appreciate that. Part of what we have in the chamber are differences of opinions, and we do the best we can on a day-to-day basis. In terms of the waiting for a future date, to me, the issue about this bill, we have a lot of adults in this room that are talking about what this bill means to them and what might be convenient, what might not, what might be uncomfortable. What I'm concerned about are the students, particularly the middle schoolers and the high schoolers, who have been impacted in very negative ways by confusion around House Bill 2220. My daughter drove up with me today. Sorry, Representative Fagan, she heard us talking because you were on the hands-free device. And when we hung up, what surprised me was Nicole talking about the confusion in her school about whether something was summative or formative. Mm-hmm. And for a 13-year-old to have in her vocabulary, is something summative or formative, and will it count towards my grade? It's inappropriate, and it's not fair for her or any of these other kids to carry the burden of that stress, of that uncertainty of House Bill 2220, which House Bill 2220 didn't do any of those things. It's why we need this bill, to clearly state that it didn't, so that students like Nicole, students in your district and all of your other districts, can know that their school districts are making decisions about grading policies, that those may be decisions that superintendents want to make, but those are decisions that superintendents need to take responsibility for as the educational leaders that are there, not say and not send home, like my kids got last week, letters that say the legislature passed a bill that said you can't get more than 75% on a test, and that we can't have extra credit, and that you can't get credit for doing your homework, and that you can't get credit for coming to school. So to me, that's why I can't wait another year, because kids are stressed out and kids are getting hurt. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Mr. Bennett?
Yes.
We heard testimony from superintendents last week. Some of us have gotten calls and had conversations with superintendents in our districts and out of our districts. When you talk about being able to come forward as an agency or an organization with the 200-some-odd school superintendents who are members, how long does that process take you to generate a response? I mean, there's certainly a mechanism for your organization when we're in session to generate responses from your organization and based on issues. What does that look like, and how long does that take to get feedback from them?
We can probably be prepared when we're aware that the issue is going to be in front of you again. But we have to know it's going to be in front of you before we can be prepared for that. And if you're going
to say
meet,
you need more than
Tuesday
minutes.
Night or Wednesday night, we'll try to be ready then.
Okay.
Or we won't be. I can't tell you for sure.
Any further questions for this panel? Representative Huffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just a comment. I think we did know. When did we meet last? Wednesday?
Last Wednesday, and this has been posted as a work session since last Monday.
I think we did know that there were questions. I mean, we had superintendents come and testify here in our hearing Wednesday. I had mentioned that I had sent those concerns to Representative Buckley the day before the hearing. So Tuesday, we were exchanging emails about this. I don't know what has been done. Apparently nothing has been done. Apparently the superintendents haven't talked to Chuck. They've been spending all their time talking to us. I don't know. But I think there was plenty of notice last week that there were concerns. Now, maybe they're unfounded, as has been suggested, and I'm willing to agree to that, but I had more superintendents pile on this morning, and puts me in a very awkward situation, probably not quite as awkward as Chuck, but nonetheless, you know, I'm in a situation where, because I literally have a number of superintendents, and that number is way north of two, saying, please do not support that. You know, and it's a shame when it seems like all we're trying to do is tell districts, you don't have to do this grading if you don't want to. I mean, it seems pretty simple for something that's now so complicated.
Representative, I just thought part of what we do is try to explain what you're doing to our members. And I thought Representative Wisnett gave a really good explanation of what this language says. It's advisory. It can be any advisory committee, and it doesn't say even that the superintendent has to meet with the advisory committee, accept their advice, or anything else. So part of what we're doing as well is trying to find out who has a problem and then go over the bill with them. And one of the tricks in lobbying is have your client read the bill with you so they know what the bill says too. And I think part of what goes on is this is kind of like that game where people say something in someone's ear and it gets moved along. And this has become a bill that somehow has been mixed in with collective bargaining inaccurately. It is being discussed in terms of issues associated with the proficiency bill that never existed, like a mandate, or that somehow this eliminates a mandate. So we have an educational problem. as an organization, as well as our members, communicating as to what this bill says. And I just thought it was one of the things we try to do is make sure they understand what actually is happening here. So that's part of why when Representative Parrish asked me, you know, how fast can I process it, part of it is just the trying to make sure we're all talking about the same thing. And we see that happen. This is not unusual. We don't usually make it up in front of you to talk about it as we go through this process, but you're not the only people we have to lobby in terms of understanding what our, so everyone we represent understands what's going on here.
Follow up.
I'm sure you have the votes to pass this today. It's, to a certain extent, this is moot, but if there's any way that we could just carry this over to tomorrow or Wednesday night, whenever, so that it gives Chuck and others a chance to get facts straight so that we aren't bombarded. Otherwise, I'm in a position where people in this room are going to hate me. Some superintendents are going to love me till they find out that the bill didn't do what they, or whatever. I don't want to be in the position I'm in, and it'd be nice if we had the time to try to get that clarified, but I just wanted to throw that out.
And I appreciate that. I wish I was not in the position that I was in. I walked into the committee having no idea that this, not just not having the language, that any amendment was being presented whatsoever at all. We have lost a day. We're now 45 minutes behind the schedule for today. I'm not sure how many of you I will be able to have at an evening hearing to continue moving forward. A 35-day session is short, and I would point out we had the legislative concept that was the introduced bill at the preview days, at the legislative days. We had the hearing last week. We had the others that were there. And while there were concerns that were brought forward, there wasn't an amendment. I mean, there's a difference. We always hear concerns on bills. It makes it hard to plan and make the trains run on time when you don't know what's there. And I'm happy to entertain the motion on the dash five, and there is a second half to this process moving forward on the other side. But I don't I just don't have the time is not on my side right now. And like you, I'm in that same difficult position. I wish that I wasn't. I wish that I had been given notice and had known so that we could have had some time and conversations to figure out how to get through this today. But that is not what happened. Representative Gorsuch.
Just to follow up on what Representative Wisnett and what the COSA representative pointed out, if you look at page 3, line 44 of the bill, starting at 26, it tells you all the things that the committee is responsible for. And then 44, I think, makes it really clear. 44H, make recommendations mm-hmm. to the school district superintendent based on the determinations of the advisory committee. There's no requirement that you have to do anything as the superintendent. And so I think it's very clear that this is recommendation and advisory only. I don't think it's saying anything beyond that. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion for this panel? Would you like to make a motion? No?
No, Madam Chair, I'd like to talk to Representative Johnson and CASA to see if there's some wording in the dash five that would be more acceptable to everyone too. I do agree that what I said about the recommendation, but if you look at the adjectives in 32 through 36, if they could be more suggestive than identify and determine, maybe that would make the superintendents happier. I don't know. So I'm not. I haven't talked to my caucus. I think maybe we don't just wait and let's see if we get another amendment. On the dash five, if you can.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Well, Madam Chair, I will commit that I will be here for any session that you have, evening or daytime, to make this right. We move big pieces of legislation in 24 and 36 hours, having served on the special session committee that we had in September. This is much smaller compared to that, but we're here because a bill passed had an unintended outcome. Mm-hmm. So to put forward another bill that could have a whole other set of unintended outcomes, I don't think is the most thoughtful process on our part, and my preference would be that we wait and get the information that we need so that this can go out right, because I want to support a fix for the bill that brought us here in the first place, but just to layer another bill that could have a whole other set of unintended consequences, I don't think is, is good policy making.
And Representative Fagan.
Respectfully, Madam Chair, I disagree with my colleague. The worst thing that could happen is that a school district takes their existing Achievement Compact Committee, already exists, exact same compilation that is this advisory committee, and that committee makes a series of recommendations to the school board, and the school board says, no thanks, we're going to do something different. This is not a situation where there can be all these horrible unintended consequences. What is at issue here in the Dash 5 amendments is whether we move forward or don't move forward with an advisory committee made up of the same makeup as the Achievement Compact Committee. The statute specifically says, or revise the duties of an existing committee. Every school district has to have an Achievement Compact Committee. This is not the kind of, that's the word that gets thrown out, unintended consequences. But this is not a bill that can, this portion of the bill is not going to create unintended consequences. The worst thing that can happen is a school district appoints an existing committee to deal with issues, to look at things like the best practices in efficiency education, the best practices in grading, the best method and format to communicate with students and parents. What's the worst that can happen when an advisory committee is simply studying what's the best thing that we can do for our kids? Everyone's saying, wait, we had teachers up here during January saying they have thousands of data points. That's already a problem that's happening. You have a student sitting right here. Students are confused. Parents are confused. Those are problems that are already happening today. But we want to wait to fix those because of unintended consequences of having an advisory committee that actually has no power to do anything except make a recommendation. I would submit that we move the bill today, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. Are there any further motions on this bill? Would somebody like to move the Dash 5?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 5.
Okay, Representative Parrish moves the Dash 5 amendment dated 2-10-14 to House Bill 4150. Do I have the script memorized? Is there any discussion? Seeing none, would you... Oh, Representative Fagan, sorry.
I was just going to say that I am going to be a no on the Dash 5 because I am always interested in finding the best ways to educate our kids and having a group get together to do that and to find the best method to communicate with students and parents is something I think we need to do today, and this Dash 5 would get rid of that entire process.
Any further discussion on the Dash 5? Yes, Representative Gorsuch.
I just want to reiterate my support for Representative Fagan's position. I think it is dealing with best practices, and that is something that we need to pursue.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Representative Fagan said, I support better communication, and that's why I support the Dash 5s, because of everything that was said here, I think we have a big communication problem that needs to get resolved before I can support the bill.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the Dash 5? Representative Parrish,
having been here now to do both bills, again, I do think that pausing, if we're going to move this today, that's great, but I think pausing and giving credence to people who are educators who are at the top of the education system in their local districts merits a stronger conversation and merits getting their concerns resolved. I don't know that I heard any superintendent on Wednesday last week say that they didn't want to get this bill fixed. They had concerns about how we were getting this bill fixed, and given that I think that the original intent of the bill clearly got lost in translation in some school districts. Note that it didn't get lost in translation in all school districts. So I get that there are populations of kids, and Charity, your district is having this challenge. Not every district is having this challenge. And so I think it's fair to say that this bill needs more work. And I appreciate that it's a short session, but again, we do a lot of really big policy in very short timelines. So to take the moment to pause and have the conversation more fully, I think we actually still have time to get that done. We can debate whether that's true or not. So I'm going to support the Dash 5s.
Thank you. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll support the Dash 5 as a means of further discussing this. I might want to bring a Dash 6 to the chair that would be agreed to by both parties, because that's what I'd like to have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wisnett. Any further discussion on the Dash 5s? All right. Could you please call the roll, Debbie, on the Dash 5s?
Representative Fagan?
No.
Representative Representative Gomber?
No.
Representative Gorsuch?
No.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Wisman?
Yes.
Vice Chair Reardon?
No.
Vice Chair Springer?
Excused.
Chair Gelser?
No. All right.
Did we pass it?
No, it did not pass. Representative Reardon. Oh, and the motion does not pass. Fails. That's a negative word.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 4150 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Reardon moves House Bill 4150 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Who wants to start the discussion first? Or have we had all the discussion we need to have?
I want to say a couple of things.
Okay, Representative Reardon.
Well, I've spent about 4 days thrashing about on this, talking to everybody that would talk to me about it. So I'm going to say a couple of words. I feel obligated to get it off my chest. I'm not happy about the development of this bill. I'm not happy that we come up to the end of the process and we have people that I respect very deeply that are still have concerns about this, the school superintendents. I'd much prefer to see these issues elevated earlier in the scheme and worked out. And so to be surprised with a fix that's a page and a half, a bold print, is just very disheartening. I'm just not happy about it. My real concern has always been since the beginning is that I believe in proficiency education and testing. I think it's a valuable thing. I am really concerned that superintendents are going to look at this. They're going to say, hey, this is not a bill. This is not a law. I don't have to do proficiency. And I see all these other things I don't like. I don't like working with committees or whatever. And they might just choose to do something else with their time. And I think that's a concern. So, but having said that, I do recognize that OEA, COSA, OSBA, my esteemed chair, and others have worked really hard to get us where we're at. And I have talked on the side with my superintendent as well. So out of respect for all the hard work that's been done, I will give a courtesy vote to this, but I would really prefer to see a little bit better job done up front on the bill. So you will get a courtesy, yes, and if something happens between now and when it gets on the floor, you may get a no on the floor.
All right, thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I think that, one, I think it's important to clarify that we had a conversation about just repealing House Bill 2220. The problem with simply repealing House Bill 2220 is that nothing in House Bill 2220 did any of the things that have been attributed to House Bill 2220. That's why you have more language here to describe what we didn't do. And I wish Representative Springer was here. She had a really good way of saying that at our January preview day. There will be another hearing on this bill on the other side. I really do wish that we had some more time. I think there's certainly a challenge in a session where you have four hearings of a committee, which ours have been abbreviated to three, hopefully three and a half, if we can all get here for an additional hearing. I do appreciate the work that Representative Buckley did. I know he spent a great deal of time working with a lot of people over a number of months. He kept me apprised of that work that was getting done. I know that people are uncomfortable. I think the biggest discomfort that I've heard, aside from the committee, is that somehow this is moving backwards in terms of what's required in terms of grading and this idea of the use of non-academic measures of learning. This bill clearly says it's up to a school district to decide. Are they allowing extra credit? Are they allowing homework? School districts have always had the authority to make that decision. The legislature has never interfered with that authority to make that decision. Many school districts have made that decision, and it may be a very good decision for those districts, but those are decisions that belong with the districts. And what parents and students and teachers need to understand and know is that if they have a concern about that, contacting all of us doesn't make a difference in that policy at the district level, because we did not make that decision. It's a conversation they need to be having with their superintendents and with their school boards, because these are decisions that were made by the superintendents and the school boards after some inaccurate information was shared by the Department of Ed. So that is what my interest is in this bill, is bringing that clarity, and it'll be up to districts to decide what to do with that now in terms of their grading. Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Comer?
Aye.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative Carey?
No.
Representative Wisman?
No.
Vice Chair Reardon?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Excused. Aye. Having received the required votes, the motion passes. And I assume that Representative Buckley would like to carry this bill. And with that, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 4150. Yes?
She closed it. Serve notice of minority report.
All right. So notice of minority report is, what do I say, recognized, received? Got it. Thank you. And remind us of the, just so that, because time is short, when does that need to be?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The rules are different.
Yes, the rules are different. The committee rules at Section 15 detail minority reports. You serve notice, so that's taken care of. 5 p.m. tomorrow is the deadline for submission of the report. Okay. Committee staff is looking forward to working with members to help them make that happen.
Thank you very much. All right. All right. We are going to move forward with... So the speaker is coming at 2:30 to talk about House Bill 4127. So we're going to move on with House Bill 4007. So I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 4007. Richard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4007 prohibits district school boards from imposing time limitations on consent given to resident students to attend schools of another district, and requires district school boards to give consent to enable students whose legal residence changes to a different school district during the school year to complete that school year in the school district, and it allows the school district boards that administers a lottery selection process to give priority for the 2014-15 school year to non-resident students who receive consent from that board during the 2013-14 school year. This was one of the three committee bills that was requested by the committee, and the committee has previously heard testimony during the January 16th legislative interim hearing days. Thank you.
Thank you. And Morgan is here. Morgan.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. And I spoke to you briefly about this bill about, I guess it's been 2 weeks or so ago. And I'll just repeat those comments and then certainly would be happy to answer any questions. But if you remember, during the 2013 session, the legislature passed House Bill 2747, which made changes to the interdistrict transfer law. And that's important. House Bill 4007 only deals with interdistrict transfers, not open enrollment or some of the other issues related to transfers and tuition. And this bill is really a result of feedback that OSBA, COSA, and others received from the folks in our school districts who are engaged in implementing transfers. And the bill is really intended to do three things. The first is it preserves transfer choices and options for students who are currently on interdistrict transfers this school year. It allows districts and school boards to ensure continuity in enrollments if they want to do that. And it gives school boards and the district staff the tools to implement the bill correctly. And so how does it do that? The first thing the bill does is it requires districts to address student mobility and mid-year moves if requested by the student. So, for example, we heard from a lot of the folks in the East Multnomah County districts where there's high poverty and high student mobility that there's concerns about being able to preserve continuity for students in their school districts. And so this essentially, if a student requests it because they move during mid-year, or if it's their senior and mom or dad gets transferred on a job, if the student requests it, they can stay in the district they started and finish out that school year, and it requires both districts to do that. So,
but they could also go to the district. They basically get to choose where they want to go.
They get to choose. So if a student wants to stay in the school district they started in year, they can. And if they'd like to go to their new district, they can as well. The second issue we heard a lot of concern about statewide was continuity for students who have inter-district transfers that are going to expire at the end of this school year. And so House Bill 4007 creates a mechanism that allows districts to set up a process where they can give preference to students who currently have inter-district transfers in their transfer process in 2014-15. And it says that the school districts where the students come from can't deny those transfers. So, for example, if you've been transferring to Corvallis from Albany for several years, but you're doing it on a year-to-year basis, this bill would allow Corvallis to essentially grandfather you in, extend out your transfer for as long as Corvallis wants to, up to the end of your schooling. And since Albany has let you go this year, then they couldn't deny that. So it's an intended to set up a mechanism so that kids can continue on in the districts they've been attending. And the third issue is it clarifies when a student requests an inter-district transfer, who decides how long that transfer is. And going forward, it's going to be the receiving district. So if the Salem-Keizer School District is going to receive inter-district transfers, the Salem from any district around, the Salem-Keizer decides how long those transfers are. And it has to be the same for every student. So, for example, they could still do year-to-year transfers if they wanted to, but they could also say students can stay through the highest grade at the school they're attending, or students can stay till they graduate. So that's the third thing that the bill does. A couple other issues that have come up, just to put on the record, one of the issues, FAPE, free and appropriate public education for special education students in particular. Cindy Hunt was at the interim hearing talking about how that is an administrative rule issue, and that will be addressed by the department and the state board. Currently on open enrollment and charter schools and other things, if a student transfers to their district, the receiving district is responsible. Because of a sort of antiquated administrative rule, that responsibility on your district transfer stays where the district lives. So we think that brings it in line with the other transfer processes. One of the other issues that has come up that was raised as an issue was what happens essentially if there's an emergency, a family emergency, a health emergency, a student's health or safety is at risk. After consulting with the Department of Education, when we heard this concern, we believe that that is already adequately addressed in the current law. And so if there's an emergency situation, districts can still provide transfers on a case-by-case basis. But essentially, to sum up the bill in a sentence or two, this allows students who currently have transfers to have the opportunity to continue those transfers uninterrupted. Without passage of this bill, there is no way that school districts can guarantee that students who currently have inter-district transfers can continue those transfers in all instances, certainly in some instances, but in every instance. It sets up a mechanism so those students' transfers are not interrupted going into the 2014-15 school year. And I'm not aware of anybody that's opposed to this. This bill has been extensively vetted with folks at OSBA, COSA, the Department of Ed, and I've talked to innumerable folks who actually do the transfers about this as well. And I think this is something that has overwhelming support. I have not heard anyone raise any issues about any of the provisions in the bill.
Great. Thank you, Morgan. Any questions for Morgan? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anybody else that wants to be heard on House Bill 4007? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4007 and open a work session on House Bill 4007. Do we have all the fiscal stuff?
Madam Chair, we do.
Great. Thank you. Representative Reardon.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 4007 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Reardon moves House Bill 4007 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Nope. Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes, the bill goes to the floor, and I will carry this one. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 4077. 4007. Wow, that's nice the way that's laid out there. There's a lot of sevens.
You're just sevens. Making all sure sevens. I was paying attention down here, right?
You know, all sevens. All right, so just to be clear, the bill we're sending to the floor is House Bill 4007. All right, very good, very good. Representative Fagan, Representative Kotek, Speaker Kotek is coming in 8 minutes. Can we do your bill that fast?
Five and a half,
great. So I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4117. Richard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 4117 directs the Department of Education to make grants to improve student achievement in certain schools that are high poverty and low performing. It appropriates money to the department from the general fund for the person making grants. It declares an emergency effective on passage. It does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and the committee has been asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments, which provides that, that a summer program named in the measure must include, quote, at least 60 hours of direct academic instruction by a teacher licensed under the relevant Oregon revised statutes or by an assistant to a teacher licensed under those statutes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome. And for the record,
since Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Shamia Fagan, State Representative for House District 51, I'm bringing before you today House Bill 4117, which we already discussed in the interim committee. But just for a reminder, it creates a summer learning grant for 19 of the state's highest need, lowest performing schools. So back in 2012, Oregon Department of Education identified about 95 schools that were focused priority schools, and those schools received grant dollars. In 2013, ODE identified another 19 schools that were, I believe the designation is other targeted priority schools, essentially high-need, low-performing schools, except that that identification did not come along with any grant funding. So what this would do would be a very targeted investment to a five-week summer program for 19 schools all across the state. Doug Whitsitt on the Senate Republican side is a co-sponsor, and so this is something that has broad applicability all across the state. And the Dash 1 amendment simply identifies that there must be at least 60 hours of instructional time. However, there certainly would be a goal that they would do more than that, but we want to give the local districts the discretion for that. And this is a targeted investment, and it's by statute that this money can only be used for a summer learning program. It's well documented that the summer learning gap that kids experience, where some kids go to camp and OMSI and have parents who can read with them and other kids don't, is actually the largest contributor to the achievement gap that we see widening in about ninth grade. So this is a targeted investment to try and close that summer learning gap for 19 of our highest need, lowest income schools.
And Representative Fagan, your staff communicated a while ago that there might be a Dash 2 amendment.
I heard rumors of that this morning, but we would prefer to move it on to Ways and Means because it does have a fiscal impact, and maybe have the Dash 2s. I understand they were very, very technical. I think it was actually a wording change from assistant to the word educational, to the phrase educational assistant. Okay. So it's purely technical, but we didn't have that ready in time for today. And I had just heard about the amendment about 15 minutes before I came to committee.
So the Dash 1 amendment is the amendment that you're interested in.
Correct.
And Senator Whitsitt.
Correct.
Thank you. I almost said Whitsitt. How do you do that? Whitsitt.
Very confusing.
It's very hard on human services.
We get their mail, they get our mail.
Are there any questions for Representative Fagan? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anybody else that would like to be heard on this bill?
I have testimony that I've turned in, but for the interest of time, I don't need to talk.
You are my favorite legislator, Representative Gorsak.
I am glad to help. So I'm in support of it.
All right. So is there anybody else that wants to be heard on House Bill 40, on House Bill 4117?
So if I go write something or turn it in, will I become your favorite too?
Only if you don't want to talk about it. Of course, you're my other favorite.
Yeah.
It's like in my family. I've got the favorite with blue eyes and the favorite whose name starts with an M. You know how it works.
She waited until your daughter
spoke. That's right. All right. Any further questions?
You are my favorite
representative that flies kites.
Oh, that's nice.
Who's your second favorite legislator that flies kites?
You are so far out there that there isn't even a second.
Not even close.
Not even close. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 4117 and opening up a work session on House Bill 4117. Representative Reardon.
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4117, dated February 5th, 2014.
Representative Reardon moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 4117, dated February 5th, 2014. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Reardon.
Chair Gelser, I move House Bill 4117 as amended to be the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Reardon moves House Bill 4117 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
quick because I can't get OLIS open. So there has been a fiscal impact?
Yeah. Yes, because it administers these grants. So Ways and Means has to authorize the person who is it.
I mean, we have a voice vote, so I get to vote yes on some of these things.
Yes. And Representative Wisnett, you are my favorite representative from Sun River.
Thank you.
You notice.
And then here's the dash one.
I'll do you even better, Representative Wisnett. You just wait. Any further discussion?
Right here.
Debbie, would you call the roll in reverse alphabetical order? Starting with Representative Wisnett.
Yes.
Because he's W.
Yes.
Okay, Representative Wisnett.
Yes. Always.
The rest doesn't matter. Any order.
Yeah.
Representative Huffman.
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative Gomber.
Yes.
Representative Bacon.
Aye. Yes.
Vice Chair
Burton. Oh, yes.
What? Vice Chair Springer.
Okay.
Chair Gelser.
Aye. Having received the required votes, the motion passes. And we don't get a carrier because it heads to Ways and Means. So that bill is on to Ways and Means.
Okay.
And it's 1 minute before the speaker's
coming. I think we have time to get one more bill in before the speaker gets here. I mean, we're clicking now.
We are.
And I just wanted to point out, Madam Chair, that I had set the bar pretty low today for Representative Gorsuch to be your favorite. So, any other day, it would have been a tough challenge.
It would have been you.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's tough. It's really tough. Maybe we'll stand at ease we're going to stand at ease until the speaker comes.
I like that.
Uh-huh. So don't leave.
Don't leave.
Can I leave my case at home?
Yeah.
Okay, we are back on the record. Committee members, please take your seats. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4127. Richard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. House Bill 4127 requires that a majority of the members of the Oregon Education Investment Board, the OEIB, be education professionals who work or have worked on a regular basis in a public educational setting, and requires that four or more of the members of the board represent the interests of public education from kindergarten through 12th grade. The committee has been asked to consider also the Dash 1 amendments that require that would require that two of the four members that work or have worked on a regular basis in education on the board be or have been teachers licensed under the relevant ORSs. And it changes some of the language from represent the interests of public education to that making the language consistent that those members have work or have worked on a regular basis in public education. Thank you.
Thank you. Speaker Kotek, welcome to our committee. We have lots of fun here, and it's always a pleasure to have you.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, it's really nice to be here. You've had a very good set of conversations already today, so glad to be here. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, and Speaker of the House. So we're here to talk about House Bill 4127. In 2011, when we passed the legislation to create the Oregon Education Investment Board, it created an opportunity for us to have integration across our systems from pre-K all the way through college. And I support the governor's work in terms of trying to make sure we get more kids graduated, have that system integration across all levels of education. I think that's a good thing. And because the OAIB plays that central role, I thought it was a good time to look at what we've been doing there and suggest some modifications and clarifications of the membership. Because what we've seen, while we have the Early Learning Council and we have now the Higher Education Coordinating Committee, a lot of the work at the OAIB has been around K-12. So this bill seeks to clarify that development at the OAIB, that we want to make sure that because there are a lot of K-12 conversations happening there, that we have expertise, on-the-ground expertise, and also want to make sure that of the 12 members of the committee of the OAIB, that half of those members have real-world experience in the classroom or as an administrator or as a principal, to clarify that that's an important piece of setting education policy in the state. So that's why you see in the original bill looking to clarify the membership that half the majority of the membership on the OAIB should have either have worked or are working in an educational setting. Could be a teacher, could be a principal, could be an administrator, could be an ESD, could be a school district, but that level of understanding of public education. And also specifying that four of the 12 members be individuals with K-12 experience. The Dash 1 amendment, which you have, is what I would call a clarification from the original draft. So making sure that the interests of public education didn't quite make sense to me when it came out of LC, so we clarify that in the Dash 1. And of the four members that would have K-12 experience, you know, seeing that two of those would be licensed educators, because then we could, you know, that even further enhances that on-the-ground experience in K-12 to provide that expertise to the OEIB. So that is the nature of the bill. I think it's important to continue to integrate all levels of the educational system. This just adds further refinement to what the OEIB has been doing, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Other Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Appreciate you being down here. Can you share with us a couple things? I've got a couple questions. What's not working with the current board that we're doing this change, and which members do you see exiting the board to make room for new members coming in?
Chair Gelser and Representative Parrish, thank you for the question. The bill would go into effect, I believe, the 1st of January 2015. And because of the way it is set up, you wouldn't have an automatic rollover of everyone. But it's not up to me. Obviously, the governor makes those recommendations as approved by the Senate. So I'm not here to advocate for anyone in particular coming on or off. I do think that after 3 years of watching the OEIB work, making sure that K-12 has a greater emphasis, and I look forward to the testimony to say, you know, maybe we need to have, you know, maybe that's not true, but that what I've seen is K-12 is primarily the topic of conversation at OEIB, because I know early learning is at the Early Learning Council. The heck is dealing with higher ed. In terms of, I really do believe we need voices, more voices of educators, people who are in the field, who are in the classroom, who are, you know, running schools or running districts, being there to provide that expertise for the OEIB. I'm not saying there's anything wrong. I think it's just an opportunity to make sure those voices are there on a regular basis. Because right now we only have one teacher who works in the classroom on the OAIB.
I'll follow up. So on the page one of the bill, section B, I ensure a majority of members of the board are public education, educational professionals. So can you again clarify for me who you envision that being? That's not very well defined in my mind of public education. So we're talking, are they superintendents? Or are you really trying to get K-12 teachers, licensed teachers, and is that the objective?
Madam Chair, Representative Parrish, so from my mind, professionals are people who have been educated and paid to do this work in an educational setting. So that could be a principal, an administrator, a teacher. In this case, it also doesn't only talk about K-12 in subsection B. It talks about public schools, post-secondary institutions, provider of early learning. So of all the people on the OEIB, could be early learning, could be higher ed, could be K-12, there should be professional educators, people who have worked in the field. The amendment would clarify, if you go to C, it talks about four or more members with expertise in K-12. Public education. Our amendment, my amendment, would clarify that two of those would be licensed teachers. And I do think they don't have to be current licensed teachers. They just, at some point in time, had to be in the classroom as a licensed professional.
Follow up. So I'm looking at the makeup of the current board, and I guess I see quite a few education professionals that currently are on the board, and even if they're an administrator at some point, based on how we do administrative licenses, a superintendent of an ESD would have been at some point possibly a teacher, at least have that basic core licensure from TSBC. So right now there are quite a few people, and there's also quite a few members, there's two members of teacher unions who are serving on here as well, who I would think are already advocating for the teachers, possibly also, and one of them is a physical education teacher, so I'm still not sure what's wrong in the makeup of the board as we put it forward in 2011, that somehow a teacher's voice is lacking on this board when clearly there are quite a few people who have had or do have licensure from TSPC.
Chair Gelson, Representative Parrish, I think the problem I have is if you look at the original legislation for the OAIB, the only thing it designates for the governor is that you have 12 members and that they each come from, you have a proportion from congressional districts. Doesn't say anything about educational background. This is clarifying that half the board, there are some people now who will certainly meet this criteria, and I think you need to analyze who's there to understand, you know, how, you know, if you'd have to move some people. It's to clarify that educators, professional educators who have actual experience, be on that board in a way, because you could have a board with absolutely no education experience based on the current statute, and I don't think that's okay.
One more follow-up. I still have concerns about removing a group of people to replace with a majority of educators. If your goal is to simply get more educators into the mix, can we add more members, which would be my personal inclination. I agree. I think teachers should have a say. I also think that there should be room for a parent person and a school board member. We could kind of do the list of who we think should be on this board based on different criteria. Why not simply just add three more positions or four more positions that are teachers so that you continue to have a more robust opportunity to have people on this board who come from all mix of, you know, public sector, other works, private sector. I don't believe that the previous board had the makeup that you're seeking, so this would be kind of entirely new. Is that
so? Chair Kelso, Representative Paris, I would assume that there will be roll off of existing members. So what could happen on the 1st of next year some people might be planning to come off anyway. And so when new people are appointed, we would have new criteria for making sure we had that balance and expertise. I'm not personally supportive of slots where you're saying we need a parent, we need an OSBA member. What I want is expertise. And the current statute does not ask for any level of education expertise for the members of the OEIB.
Representative Bacon.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. More just a comment, but what I hear you saying is not that you want to replace certain people, but that instead of allowing this to be entirely decided by the executive branch, that the legislature stepping up and taking an active role in defining exactly what we want it to look like when a group comes together to set education policy for the state, and I certainly support those efforts.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Wisnik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is the governor's office going to testify? Are they scheduled to testify?
Do we have anybody signed up to testify?
As far as I know, no.
Do we have anybody that wants to come up?
Or Madam Speaker, you can maybe tell me, has the governor support this?
Chair Gelsler and Representative Wisnett, I've had a conversation with the governor about my bill. I can't speak to, we didn't have a conversation, do you support it or not, but he's aware that the bill is out there.
Madam Speaker, I'm trying to get through the bill and all these pages going back and forth. You're saying you're proposing it go from 2 to 6. Is that what I'm hearing you're saying?
Chair Gelsler, Representative Wisnett, no, there are 12 members. And it would say that
the majority,
so seven of them. Actually, there's technically 13 members of the board. One of them is the governor, or the designee of the governor. In this case, it's Nancy Golden as the executive director of the OAIB. But of the 12 members, seven of them would have to meet the criteria of having public educational professionals, having been one or currently one. And then for the 12, with K-12, and the amendment would just clarify further that of the four, two of those should be licensed educators. Again, this is about moving forward. I mean, we all might know what we think should be there, but, new governor, new appointees, thanks. This could be somebody else in the future. It's an education policy board.
Right. Follow-up.
Follow-up, Representative Wisnett.
So, I'm sorry again, trying to read this. So those other five members, they do not have to have license, they do not have to be teachers, is that correct?
Chair Gelsler, Representative Wisnett, correct. Right now, those 12 members could be anyone. They could be my 12 neighbors.
Even a state legislator.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Follow-up, Madam Chair.
One more follow-up, and I know Dr. Golden has indicated she wants to come on up.
That was
you come on up? I know there's another committee in this room in about 12 minutes.
No, that was my question. I'm glad Dr. Golden's coming up. So, Dr. Golden, you are on the EOIB, whatever, is that correct? Is that in the statute?
Madam Chair, Representative Winsett, it was a question in Miami.
For the record,
I am Nancy Golden, the Chief Education Officer. Could you repeat the question?
So, the speaker said that there's actually 13 members, and you're the 13th member. Is that in statute?
Before I had this position, I was the 13th member. I was the alternate chair for the governor when he wasn't able to be at the meeting. Since I became the chief education officer, Mary Spilde, president of Lane Community College, now sits in that position.
So, follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
So, Madam Speaker, my question is, because we heard in the paper that Rudy Cruz said he didn't know what his job was or where he was, or maybe he wasn't here enough time to figure that out, but is it in statute that the governor's chief executive or education officer is that 13th member, or is it the governor?
And Madam Chair and Representative Wisnett, I have the bill in front of me. It's the board consists of 13 members, and at first it says the governor or the designee of the governor, which, as thank you, Nancy, for clarifying, she used to be, but now that she's the chief education officer, is Mary Spilby. So.
Right, the chief education officer is the executive of the agency. So just as the state board works with Rob Saxon, who's not a member of the board or your superintendent.
She's like executive director. Is she the executive director?
Basically, right.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Parrish.
Last question, I promise. The OEIB is set to expire or sunset in 2016, and other than the Rudy Crew mess, I don't get feedback, or I'm not getting feedback. There are currently problems with the board that would merit a change. So, my gut says I want to continue to let some of the policies that we've passed around education as part of those big changes to have time to kind of mature and then come back and have that conversation. So I'm still kind of trying to wrap my head around the axle around why the change and why now and why ahead of the bigger conversation about the sunsetting of OAIB or the renewal of that or the lifting of the sunset and letting it be in permanent existence. It feels premature.
So, Representative Gelser, members of the committee, you know, in general, when we thought of this board, when the bill passed, it was to be a very diverse group of people with many different perspectives, not representing a particular sector or interest. On the other hand, we care very deeply about the voice of educators. I think it's important also to know, you'll hear after this, that there's another bill where OSBA is asking for a position on the board. But what we think is important is we think it's a little premature before we had a discussion about the sunset. So that's what I would.
Excuse me, can I follow up? You think the OSBA bill?
I think adding new people before you've had a discussion about the sunset is a little premature, is all.
So can I follow up for clarification?
Briefly,
adding new people is premature. Why is changing the mix not premature?
Representative Gelser, Representative Parrish, we're just saying we would like to be in the discussion, but we think it's important to also be having a discussion about the sunset at the same time you would be suggesting a different composition.
And just as a clarification, would the relating clause of this bill allow for that conversation? It appears to be pretty narrow.
No. Madam Chair, my bill is strictly related to the membership and trying to strengthen the expertise, although I understand the sunset question would be before us at least by next year.
And I was just on the technical question of this bill, but it looks like relating to the membership of the Oregon Education Investment Board. Any further questions? Dr. Golden, did you have other things you wanted to say besides very graciously answering questions?
No, that's it. I just really appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about OAIB and the important role it plays in creating a unified system that makes investments and recommends policies to you so we can improve our outcomes for students.
So, and I just, on the record, wanted to thank you for being so accessible, so engaged, and so helpful in terms of finding solutions where there's challenges. It's just been a real pleasure and really an honor to get to work with you, and even between 5 and 6 in the morning, I'm always grateful and appreciative.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Don't let her. She's not always available at 5 and 6. Thank you.
Madam Speaker, thank you. And we don't have the paperwork on this bill.
Do you have the Dash 1 amendment?
We have the Dash 1 amendment.
Yes,
we don't have the
realized that you might have just gotten that, so I assume.
Yeah, so Wednesday. We'll carry it over to Wednesday.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I support fully the concept that one's not enough. I'm not sure I agree with 7. I'll probably be a no on the bill, but I completely agree that one's not acceptable.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4127. We are carrying over to our next hearing, which may be Wednesday or maybe sooner. Can it be sooner, or does it have to, if we have another hearing, does it have to be Wednesday night? Today's Monday. Okay, so stay tuned. We really will need all of you if we're able to find a way to get that done. But so is it acceptable if I just say I'm carrying over to our next hearing, House Bill 4127, House Bill 4077, and that keeps everything alive, right? Anybody see anything on there that I'm missing? All right. Great. We're adjourned.
I'll be here whenever you schedule.
And we'll try not to.
I'll show up.
And we'll try not to.
I'll show up. I'll be here whenever.